Hey, it's May 4th, 2017. This is Beginner's Puck, a podcast for hockey fans both new and old.
I'm not going to do the May the 4th be with you joke. Just not.
How did I not even think of that?
Oh,
I feel like
Erica,
a failure as a nerd.
Oh my God, they're going to come and revoke your nerd card.
It's probably because we're actually recording this on the 3rd and I'm just not in the spirit yet, that's all.
It could be. Hey, I've already got my Star Wars pancake molds out for tomorrow morning because
Ooh. That's
what you do when you're a mom, especially when you're a mom of nerds.
How can I work Star Wars into business casual? That's what I'll have to think of for tomorrow.
Good plan. So normally this would be the time that I would say, oh, how are things going with the Oilers? I'm not going to do that. You want to know why?
Why?
Because I've got really exciting Flyers news this time.
Oh, that's right. Of course you do.
Yes. So this week was the draft lottery. Now, we're going to be talking about the draft extensively as we get closer to the draft, which is being held in June in Las Vegas. But the lottery isn't actually the draft. It tells the teams what order they get to pick in the draft. So the draft is this really cool thing. It's a big room. There's people with computers and laptops and iPads and pads of paper and sweat and water bottles. And there's deals happening. It's really, really cool. And one of the very first hockey fanish things I ever got involved in. Mm-hmm. So I'm very fond of the draft. But there's a definite order on how things, how teams get to pick. And those orders can be traded back and forth all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
we'll get into that later.
This is a really cheap way to get talent. So everybody is very, very concerned about the draft. Now, you guys lucked out last year because you got, not last year, the year before, you got Connor McDavid.
Yeah, we won the draft, capital T, the draft.
Yes, the draft. Because last year, the Toronto Maple Leafs won the draft lottery and they got Austin Matthews, who they're both considered generational players.
Yeah.
Which just means they're, explain what a generational player is.
Basically that in a generation, you're only going to see one player of this caliber. Like, we haven't seen anybody as good as Connor McDavid in a generation. And at that time it was Wayne Gretzky, who also happened to be an Edmonton Oiler. Sorry.
Yeah,
did I sound smug there? I think I said
a little bit.
Smug. Sorry.
Just a little smug. So it's really important. Like, getting a top three draft pick is huge. And so what they do is every team gets a number of balls or chances in the lottery. And it's all sort of weighted by where you end up at the end of the season. So teams that have a really bad record get more options, get more pick or more chances.
Yeah. So basically, the more you suck, the better your chance of getting a high pick in the draft.
Yes. Except for this year. Because against all odds, none of the really worst teams made it to the top three. Now, what happens is the top three is sort of up for grabs. After the top three, then they go in the order of suckitude,
yep.
I do believe.
Yes, okay. That is correct.
So this year, the Colorado Avalanche, bless their hearts.
Oh, those poor boys.
I know. Those poor, good, bad hockey boys. They were heavily the favorites. Now, this year also, because we have an expansion team with Vegas Golden Knights, they got a couple extra chances as well. So they were kind of up there. So people were thinking, oh, it's Colorado, Vegas. Like, who's going to go number one? Who's going to go number two? None of them did. Mm-hmm. It was actually the first pick went to the New Jersey Devils. And the second pick went to the Philadelphia Flyers,
who were originally slated to pick 13th. And
13th.
They had, I think it was 2.4% chance or something like that of ending up in the top three. And so jumped from 13 to number two. Congratulations, Deb.
Yes. It's like the highest, it's the biggest jump in like decades. It's huge. It is a huge, huge jump. Now, I really wasn't paying too much attention to this because all the word on the street, the metaphorical hockey street, is this year's draft class is a little weak. So like last year, we could have had a shot at Patrick Laine or Austin Matthews. This year, they haven't really definitively even picked a number one draft pick. It's been that close. Have you been following Uncle Bob McKenzie's draft reports?
Not a whole lot. I haven't. I know that it's sort of down to two, and I'm blanking on their names right now, but it's sort of like the the two sort of top contenders, but neither one of them is head and shoulders above the other ones. So, I mean, it sounds like there's a chance that the Flyers, if they should choose to, will get, you know, somebody who's literally at the top of the heap.
Yeah. So right now the top two are Nolan Patrick. I don't remember if he's Canadian or American, but he's definitely North American. Mm-hmm. And Nico Hischier, who I believe is from Switzerland.
He's Swiss, yep.
He's Swiss. And I do remember watching Nico in the World Juniors at Christmas this year, and he kind of caught my eye. He was a very flashy player. So we're going to get one of those guys, or maybe somebody else. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Things can happen between now and then, but they're the top of the heap. And while they may not be, you know, a generational player, they're going to be a solid player who is, because of their skill level, is going to be more NHL ready than mm-hmm. a player that's going to be lower down in the draft lottery.
Very true.
Thing. Yeah. So that was really exciting. There was much celebration in the city of brotherly love, I have to tell you.
I can imagine. I remember being around when Connor McDavid was picked, or actually just, you know, when we knew we were going to be the first pick, because then, like, there was no chance of picking anybody besides Connor McDavid when you landed in the first spot that year.
Yeah, you guys lucked out.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the one thing I didn't, and maybe you know, because I was seeing a bunch of tweets about this, that the rules have changed slightly because Edmonton scooped up on the number one draft pick like too many years in a row. So they weighted mm-hmm. things differently. I don't know. I didn't do a lot of research on that. So I don't know whether
I don't know the full math of it. I think the way it works is basically that before the player who was at the very, very bottom with the worst record in the league had an even greater chance of being at the top than now. So they sort of loosened that up and made it possible for other teams who are, you know, somewhere more in the middle to have a slightly better chance of landing in that top three spot, which is exactly what happened. I mean, yeah, it was only a 2.4%, but that's, I guess, more than it probably would have been before.
That's true, because you guys just suck so badly for so many years.
Yeah, and it's not number one, like, shot. We weren't tanking on purpose to try to get these draft picks, believe
me. Sure, sure. Yep. Connor McDavid rolls around. You guys were flopping all over the ice.
There was a hashtag going around hockey Twitter that year near the end of the season. Hashtag no honor for Connor, because there were a lot of teams. There were a lot of teams that were suddenly not doing, you know, they weren't doing great to start with, and were suddenly doing so much worse. The Oilers were not one of those teams. Those boys were trying, and they really weren't that good at that point.
Oh, poor hockey boys. So, yeah, the Colorado Avalanche got the fourth pick.
I know.
And I think the Vegas Golden Knights got fifth or sixth.
At sixth, which was actually mandated to be the lowest spot that they could have possibly been in. Sorry, Vegas.
Yeah, they're trying to make the best of it. I saw something on Twitter where they were saying, here are some players over the years that have been picked at number six. Look how good they were. Bless their hearts. Mm-hmm. So, and speaking of the expansion draft and Las Vegas, that's not Las Vegas Golden Knights, it's just Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. That's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. Be tough to remember. The NHL and the NHLPA, which is the National Hockey League Players Association, released a list of players that are automatically protected from the draft. Mm-hmm. And these are players that maybe have not retired yet, but they're still on long-term injury lists. Mm-hmm. They're non-functional players that for whatever reason, contract stipulated that teams still have them on their roster and they're still considered part of their cap space.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it, but like I would assume like Andrew Ferentz from the Edmonton Oilers is still on there. That kind of thing, because he hasn't played in a while, but he's still technically on the books.
So I'm looking at it. Well, no, he's not actually. Hmm. It's Dave Bolin from Arizona, Craig Cunningham, Chris Pronger, Cormac. Let me see. Maybe he is. No, I don't see his name there. But they are, and what this does is basically it allows teams to protect players that are on their active roster because they have so many spots that they can protect. So it's like that's the first ripple in the pond of the Hockey Hunger Games.
Yep.
It's the first exempt list. So I do know there was a bunch of scuttlebutt around as to whether they were actually going to release, they were going to let teams release their list of protected players to the public or whether that was going to be kept private, but I think it's
like they could keep that private. Come on, that would be leaked so fast.
Yeah, exactly. And the rumors going around would make it even worse. Do you know what I mean? It, the speculation. So I think that they're going to do it a few days ahead of time. So, you know, teams will have a chance to talk to their players. There's some players that they're going to be forced to protect. But again, we'll cover that more in depth as it gets closer. So these are all players that for some reason or other are still getting paid. They're not playing. Mm-hmm. They have not yet retired.
Gotcha. So,
yes. So we will put a link to all of these wonderful things in our show notes. Mm-hmm. Just very quickly, the World Men's World Championships is heating up. It's starting. Games are starting on Friday, and they will be aired on NHL Network and NBC CSN, I believe. They have a list of games. And I think the NBC affiliate's going to be not airing them live. They're going to be airing them at like stupid o'clock at night, probably for the West Coast people. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be replays. But I think NHL is airing them live, which will be a lot of morning games, which will be fun.
Yeah, I probably won't get to watch a lot of that. My mom is coming to visit for the weekend, and she's not a big hockey fan, so we probably won't.
Oh, no.
Just kind of a bummer.
Renee!
Yeah.
I have to work on her.
Mm-hmm. I need to take her to some more games in person. That's all.
This is true. There's lots of information on the IIHF website, the International Hockey League, Hockey Foundation, Ice Hockey Foundation, which is a terrible website. I even hate to direct people to it.
I know, it's not good.
Terrible. Oh my gosh. Like, they have teams. So you click on teams, you're thinking, oh, I want to see the team rosters. So I don't have to go to each country's individual web page and look at the rosters. No, none of the information's there.
It's Google is your friend, I think.
I know, but still, it should be tidy. It should, like, good web content management, people.
I agree.
All right. So that's sort of most pressing news, I think, that I've come across this week that has been of interest. So I guess we should talk about these playoffs.
Yeah. Ooh. There's still playoffs happening. The Oilers play in 2 hours. Actually, 1 minute less than that.
I actually have the Washington Capitals game on silent on my iPad as we're recording, because as I scheduled this recording, I didn't realize this game was going to be as hot as it was due to circumstances.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about those circumstances?
Oh my God. Everybody else has.
They have.
This has like consumed the hockey world for the past couple days.
With good reason, I think. So what happened was it was a very unfortunate and ugly looking sort of double hit on Sidney Crosby, and he ended up with a concussion. It started with a slash from Ovechkin as they were, you know, very close to the net, heading towards the Capitals net. And the slash sort of, I think, caught him off guard. It knocked him off balance. He ended up sort of falling away from Ovechkin and toward Niskanen, who was already coming in to sort of cross check him. And because Crosby was falling down, his head kept getting lower and lower, because that's how gravity works. And when Niskanen made contact, he actually made contact with Crosby's head, his stick to the head. And he went down, and it was really ugly. And they kept showing it over and over again, which was just, oh, I hate that sort of thing. And I feel like, I mean, I don't feel like there was the intent to cause a concussion or injure him by either one of those players, but I do think that Ovechkin absolutely blatantly slashed him, and they missed calling that. And I do think that if Niskanen would have tried, like, his gut instinct was not to pull back or move away. He kept going. Was he aiming for the head? No, but the head came at him, and I feel like he maybe could have, certainly should have done more to get out of the way, but they have a history, those two, and I feel like my thoughts are the way that the NHL is sort of set up right now, and the way that they are calling, or should I say not calling, penalties on things like slashes and stuff, that this is the kind of thing that's going to happen. This is just like, it is going to continue to happen. And Niskanen did get a 5-minute major and a game suspension. So he was removed from the game.
He got a game misconduct.
Game misconduct. That's what it was. Thank you.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean, I feel like
which
that's
is basically a game
fine.
Misconduct is like, you're out of the game. You're done.
Bye-bye. Yeah. And I think that that is pretty appropriate given what I saw over and over and over again. I just think that the way that hitting and slashing and hooking and all of that stuff is let go during the regular season and super let go during the playoffs is just setting us up for this sort of thing. And until the NHL decides to kind of take, I think that it's not just on the refs to call more penalties, although that would help. They also need to, you know, do it from the player side and educate the players about, like, hey guys, this is not good. People keep getting injured, whether it's Johnny Gaudreau breaking his hand because somebody slashes him or something like this, and arguably the best player in the game getting taken out for we don't know how long, certainly for the mm-hmm. next game. And I wouldn't be surprised if more, because this is his third concussion for Sidney Crosby.
Yeah. So, he has a bad history of the concussions. Like, he missed almost an entire season 1 year. And, you know, I kind of agree that the slash, Ovechkin slash, was blatant. Now, he went for the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Sid kind of threw his head back. The stick caught him, like, on the mm-hmm. side of the head. Like, you know, Ovechkin wasn't aiming for his head.
No.
You know, he's not even Ovechkin's that dumb. Yeah. You know, kind of slashed across the shoulder. But the way that Crosby, you know, kind of twisted around, then it hit his head, and then his feet got tangled up. So, yeah. And it looked, you know, I've looked at this so many times because everybody's first reaction was like, oh, my God, this is a garbage team. How could they, take out Crosby like that? And it really does look like Niskanen was bracing himself. But, like, you're right. Like, did he try as hard as he could have to get out of the way? I don't know. It happened so fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happened really, really quickly. Now, you're seeing a lot of the slowdown GIFs and
yep.
and the slowdown replays. But when you watch that play as it's happening, it's like milliseconds in
yeah.
between everything that's going on. And I think I mentioned on our last recording, like, the thing that has really surprised me about the playoffs is the intensity and the lack of penalty calls. And I know you had said that this is they don't want to decide a game by a penalty, and they don't want to slow the game down, sort of thing. But it's been really frustrating to see the sort of the hot takes that come out of this, because it's Crosby, right?
Yep.
So if it had been any other player, it would have been like that shouldn't have happened. You know, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. they need to do something. What a shame. But because it's Crosby, all of a sudden the rhetoric has ramped up 100%. And this is just, I mean, Crosby just, he cut off the tip of a guy's finger with a slash, you know, mm-hmm. not that long ago. So there's no team that is squeaky clean when it comes to this kind of thing. I mean, Draisaitl on your team, you know, got suspended because he, mm-hmm. you know, slashed somebody in the, you know, the family mm-hmm. jewels area.
Yep.
So it's a universal thing. And now, because it's Crosby, we need to start protecting our star players. We need to protect all the players.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. I understand that, you know, a Connor McDavid and a Sidney Crosby and even a Johnny Gaudreau, I mean, they do mm-hmm. seem to be targeted more, but that's because you want to shut down the player that has the best chance of scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But there's ways to do that, I think, without slashing mm-hmm. or without hurting somebody.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you are a good defenseman, then there are other ways to do that. I think that slashing somebody and hooking them, that's the easy way to get in their way, but that's not the only way. It's just the easier than just being really yeah. awesome.
And then, of course, there's the ridiculous accusations. If the, you know, and I, being from Philadelphia, I'm supposed to not like Pittsburgh, right? That's
right.
sort of our mm-hmm. our cross-state rivalry. Pittsburgh's a good hockey team. I enjoy watching Pittsburgh play. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't have a real beef with Pittsburgh, other than it's fun to cheer against them when they come into town, as you do with a rivalry. But
of course,
my God, they have some phenomenal players on their team. They are good hockey players.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pittsburgh sports media is the worst.
Is it?
It is just the worst. If anything, I've walked away from this thinking I really hate Pittsburgh sports media.
I have heard that they've got, like, conspiracy theories because the Capitals
yes.
dressed 7 defensemen instead of the usual 6. And,
yes,
you know, and one of them got, you know, kicked out of the game. Niskanen was gone. So, look, they still have their 6 defensemen. And, like,
mm-hmm.
like this. How? I'm sorry, but, I mean, maybe your coach could have had an idea that they were just going to go hard and just try to play that way. And maybe somebody would get booted. And that's why you're dressing that many defensemen. But there's no way in heck that they could have planned this particular thing to take out Sidney Crosby. Like, unless you have a magic, like, crystal ball. No.
unless you can, I don't know, stop time and put people into position. Yeah, like it, that is crazy. And the idea that there was, you know, and I'm air quoting this hard, a hit put on Crosby during that closed door meeting that was infamously held after the second game in the series, after the Capitals lost. It's I can't even imagine. I mean, I mean, the NHL is not perfect, but wasn't there, there was a case a couple years ago where supposedly a coach told players to target, to specifically target another player, and they did, and the guy ended, I can't remember, Bertuzzi or something, and the guy ended up, you know, never playing hockey again. He had broken vertebrae, a concussion, all sorts of things, and he was criminally charged. I mean, you can be criminally charged for violence on the ice for that sort of thing. So the accusations that a player would risk their entire career for this is, I think, is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. So that's my hot take on it was such an unfortunate series of events. It breaks my heart that Sidney Crosby is out, because I mean, that has long-term health consequences.
Yeah, I'm worried for him.
I am worried for him. And I'm also worried that it doesn't look like it right now, because Pittsburgh's up by one as we're recording this. But if Washington should somehow or other pull this out and actually win, there's always going to be this question mark hovering over this. You know what I mean?
Yep. It would be a win with an asterisk, a great big flashing asterisk. Asterisk next to it. Yep.
I mean, footnote on the Wikipedia article.
We talked, I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, about, you know, the gut and how your gut can kind of influence who you're cheering for. And I do have to say that after that hit, my gut changed directions, and I had really been rooting for the Caps, and I'm not anymore. And it's not because I think that they did that on purpose. Do I think that they were maybe out to be extra tough on Crosby? Well, yes. Yes, I do. Not in like a put a hit on him sort of a way, but because he's the best player on their team. But I think that my gut just really likes the idea of, you know, sort of the underdog story. The thought that, you know, maybe Crosby's not going to be back, you know, maybe. We don't know for how long. And the idea of this team with all of these players hurt going farther and winning, I think that's that would be really cool. As long as they don't beat the Oilers.
I normally would, but Pittsburgh plays that underdog narrative so hard when they shouldn't. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they are at the top of their game. Yes, they have a lot of injuries, but they fill those holes so amazingly well. So, you know, they're always like, oh, you know, we just barely squeak that one out when they're like dominating. So, yeah, that gets a little tired for me. I do agree. And I think the Caps really lost the thread at the end of that game, because they were up by two. And in the last 2.5 minutes ended up, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins tied it up.
So. That was just so very Caps of them to do in the playoffs.
It was. Oh, and Pittsburgh just scored again. So,
I just saw that.
Oh, anyway. So let's talk about something more pleasant. Your Oilers came back.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had a not so good game, but they're leading the series, and they are playing tonight. And I at work, I mentioned earlier, business casual. That's what we're supposed to normally wear, but we've been given dispensation to wear jerseys and colors and stuff on days that they play. So I wore one of Steven's Oilers jerseys and a very nice, you know, businessy pencil skirt with bright orange tights. So nice. I was totally rocking the Orange Crush look, and I actually have some Orange Crush and some non-dairy vanilla ice cream. I'm going to make myself some Orange Crush floats while I'm watching the game tonight. I am so ready to cheer my team on and watch them, you know, sort of get their mojo back.
Yeah, it's been a fun series so far. I mean, it's been fun watching Nashville play. Oh my God, Nashville! Like, that town is hockey obsessed, and it that's been a fun series to watch just because of the crowd.
Yes,
the Sens. You know, well, they lost Madison Square Garden this week, but you know, they've been doing really well. It's like, playoff hockey has been fun to watch. I wish I'd been watching, could watch more of it. I seem to be catching some of it in the car, and some of it, you know, like the end of the game at home, because I don't know why, but people don't want to hear that, like, you're really sorry that you can't come to their 60th birthday party because you really want to watch game two of the Washington. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh. It's not flying.
Doesn't go over very well, I'm sure.
Kids need to go places. I don't know why life just doesn't stop when playoff hockey is on.
It really hard. Should. You know, it's I kind of really hate, hard. Speaking of Nashville, I kind of hate that they are doing so well in the same year that the Oilers managed to make it back into the playoffs, because I would love to be rooting for Nashville. But I mean, I guess I am right now. Like, I like them, their team. I would like them to win. But if they make it to the next round, and so do the Oilers, then I can't root for them anymore. So that makes me a little sad. Hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough. We'll see. Maybe I'll root for them. We can have a little controversy.
There
on
we
the podcast.
Go. Ooh.
I don't know. I like yellow. It's a good color.
It is. It's pretty great.
But there's also been a lot of the Anaheim and Oilers games have been a little chippy as well. They've been super physical.
Yeah, of course. Pretty much every game with the Ducks is super physical, and the Oilers have gotten more physical over the course of the last year. So, yeah, it's I'm just holding my breath every time that everybody is extra careful and nobody ends up concussed on our team.
It's true. Now, I do have to say that I admire the composure that the Anaheim Ducks, or not Anaheim Ducks, the Edmonton mm-hmm. Oilers have shown against Anaheim Ducks. I mean, there's they've not lost their temper all that often. I mean, mm-hmm. there's been moments
they did
kind of succumb to that.
But. Yeah, the first it seemed like in the first series when they were playing against the Sharks, they did a lot more of that. And I suspect that Todd McClellan sort of gave them some talking to's, mm-hmm. whatever, and said, you guys, you need to be professional about this. You need to keep it under control. And I think that they have done a good job of that, because even some of the players who are usually the most chippy are not giving into that and not dropping the gloves and not going overboard as much as they could be. So I hope they continue to keep that up. It seems like the games that they do more poorly in tend to be the ones that they are a little less disciplined. So mm-hmm. I think that, the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, definitely. And I know part of that has been because Randy Carlyle, and there's been a lot of discussion about this. Now, Randy Carlyle is the coach of the Anaheim Ducks, and he is an obsessive line matcher. Mm-hmm. So he's got, Ryan Kessler out there like on Connor McDavid. It's this idea that when, this player is out there, he's putting players up with a specific intent to either match that line, to goad that line, to agitate that line, whatever he needs to do. Mm-hmm. And it's, coaches tend to be a little more flexible when it comes to that. But he is like tic-tac-toe all the time mm-hmm. with that. So it's been interesting to watch the results of that.
It has.
So, but something? Mm-hmm. Now that we're talking about that, I think it's time to learn something new about hockey. How about we chat about matching lines?
All right. It's time for What the Puck, the things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn sometime.
So, Erica, what the puck does matching lines even mean?
Well, matching lines, as you sort of alluded to, is when the three players, usually you're mostly looking at the forwards, but not always. So you got your three forwards, and figuring out the three forwards on your team that are going to best be able to defeat or overcome or, like you said, annoy the three forwards on the other team. And it's an interesting rule that the home team gets to make the sort of the last choice of who goes out there during a stoppage. So, mm-hmm. Either it's the beginning of the game or there's been a whistle for some reason and the visiting team, puts their guys out to jump into the faceoff circle to get going. And then the home team gets to decide who they put out on the ice. So from the moment that the puck drops, you've got this line matched with that line. But if you're Randy Carlyle and you're visiting the Edmonton Oilers and, the Oilers put out somebody that you don't like that matchup against your players, he, like Deb said, he's a he's a real line matcher. He will encourage his team to make a change sooner rather than later to get the team or to get the line out there that he mm-hmm. wants matched up against people. So, like you were saying, Ryan Kessler and Connor McDavid.
Right. So to describe what a line is, so mm-hmm. each hockey team typically has, will have four lines. They'll have a first line, second line, third line, and fourth line. And basically what a line is, it's a center and it's a left wing and a right wing. Mm-hmm. And it's usually like each line has sort of a particular role. Now, as teams become more skilled and the games become more fast, sometimes that role blurs a little bit. But like your first line or your top line are typically your mm-hmm. best offensive players. They're the cream of the crop, right? That's where your Connor mm-hmm. McDavid and your Sidney Crosby is sitting. And the second line is like your second best line of players, or sometimes they'll be, you know, a really strong player who could be on the first line, but they want to have those lines have a little bit more depth. So they'll put that player down on the second line to be the anchor for the second line. And again, those two lines tend to be more of your scoring lines. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, and I don't know from my reading, so and if this has changed, because sometimes as the game changes, these definitions change. And the third line is sometimes called the checking line, and that's mm-hmm. more of your defensive forwards. Or basically, their goal is to sort of wear down the line mm-hmm. that's out there, which is to give your other lines a chance to rest.
Yes.
And because a line will typically play like what? 50 seconds to mm-hmm. a minute and a half?
Maybe. 90 seconds is a long shift.
That's a long shift.
Sometimes as short as 20 or 30 seconds. Like they get out there, they do something, boom, they're back on the bench.
They're back on the bench because hockey is such a physical, exhausting game because mm-hmm. you're going hard the second you hit the ice. You're not floating around. You're mm-hmm. doing that. So a third line would be the checking line, which is very defensive. And the fourth line basically is they're just out there to make sure no goals are scored while everybody else is catching their breath mm-hmm. until they can get. So like you're sort of like your least scoring players are on your mm-hmm. fourth line. Now, again, this is all part of a really good coach is to know when to mix those lines up because the lines mm-hmm. are practiced together. They have really good chemistry. They know when to pass to each other. You know, they've worked together. But sometimes, you know, a coach will kind of flip it up a little bit and throw somebody else on a mid-game. If something's not working, mm-hmm. they'll throw another player in.
Or if they're doing really well. Sometimes, I know Todd McClellan does this on the Oilers sometimes. Like, if somebody who's on, like, that third or fourth line, who, you know, is, you know, those are the lines that are kind of out there to kill time. If they're mm-hmm. doing really well or having a really hot game, sometimes one of those players will get bumped up to the next lineup. Right. And, you know, the player on that line will then get sort of bumped down and they'll change it. That's also a way, like you were saying, Deb, to sort of, if things aren't going well, sometimes you can just change the chemistry of the game by sort of, mm-hmm. you know, just basically, there have been a few games where I honestly thought that Todd McClellan just took all of the players' names, put them in a box, shook up the box, and threw it at the wall, and then just like let the names filter down and just like, okay, here's a line.
That was Ron Hextall's coaching.
Oh, did he do that too?
Dave Hextall's coaching method towards the end of the season. It was, I'm going to throw everything at the wall and whatever sticks is how we're going to play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was our line shifted so often. And I think that, you know, while you're trying to find the right combination, I think it also kind of screws up with your chemistry. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know any coach that would say that like line management probably isn't the most important
aspect
of their job.
It's interesting to watch it, I think, at the beginning of a season when you have some, you know, some new players usually. Then you'll see things changed a lot more because you're kind of trying to find that chemistry, which players work together really well. You could have, you know, a left winger who's like the greatest left winger on your team and a center who's the greatest center on your team. And if they don't have great chemistry, you're not going to put those two on the same line. Right. One of them's going to be on the second line.
Right. Chemistry is that mystery ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
Who works well together? So, yeah. And there's also, you know, your penalty kill line, your power play line, but that's a whole different conversation.
Yes. Special teams
we'll talk
are
about
different.
This later. Yeah. Special teams are a whole different thing. So that's basically what a line does. Mm-hmm. And we'll put a link to the Wikipedia article on that if you want to read a little bit more on your own for some definitions. So it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to watch the shift changes. And if you look, like your first line will typically have the most ice time, because at the end of the game, they usually have the stats of, you know, who was on the ice the most. And it's usually your first line and second line get the most ice time, and your third and fourth lines, it sort of decreases. So you'll have players that get like 9-10 minutes a game. So,
and that's it. And then you have some that are like, you know, 20 minutes a game. So like that's,
or 30,
or
that's rough. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, they're getting paid all this money to play 30 minutes a game. And you're like, no, you don't understand. Players lose like weight from the start of the game to the end of the game.
They do. That's why they're always squirting, you know, Gatorade into their mouths, because they've literally lost that much liquid just skating around in all those pads.
They do. So that is lines. And I think that is going to tie really nicely into my hockey tidbit tonight.
Ooh, I'm excited. Hockey tidbit time.
So my hockey tidbit ties really into what we were just talking about in lines, because hockey, because they're so cool and the players are so cool and the fans are just crazy. Hockey lines tend to get nicknames if they're really good and really affected. And we saw that last year with the Pittsburgh Penguins, very famously during their playoff run, had the HBK line, which was, and I'm Carl Hagelin, Nick Bonino, and Phil Kessel. And it was just the initials of their name, but was also an acronym that was made famous by a professional wrestler who went by HBK, or the Heartbreak Kid. So that was kind of cute. There's a Wikipedia page that has just lists and lists of names. So, for example, the Flyers had a very famous line at one point called the Legion of Doom.
Which, I love that fact, so much.
I know. And basically, the Legion of Doom was, I'm trying to pull up, I had it highlighted, but of course I have now since lost it. That was, I know it was Eric Lindros. Okay, Legion of Doom. It was, and this was in the 1994-97 series. It was Eric Lindros, John LeClaire, and Mikhail Remberg. And these guys were huge. They were all 6'2" or taller, and they each weighed over 230 pounds. Like, when this line was coming for you, it was like the physical embodiment of a Shea Weber slap shot. You just like roll right over you.
Doom is right.
Yeah. So there's all sorts. There's the Olympic line, the party line, the $1 million line. If you go through this list, it is absolutely hysterical. There's the Clydesdale line, which was on the Chicago Blackhawks in 84-87, which like three giant players. So they call them the Clydesdale line. And sometimes it's a play on people's names. And there was the French Connection in Buffalo Sabres that had three French players. It's one of those fun little hockey things that just is silly and ridiculous. And it can really rally a fan base. And it can kind of fire up a team a little bit, too. When, if you're part of a really super cool line, like, you're going to work to keep that reputation.
That's true. Yeah. So. It, you know, talking about chemistry, like that's a thing to help bolster the chemistry. Just having a name like that, you know, like when you join a club, like, or you start a club, you come up with a name like that name.
Right. Here's a really fun one. The ZZ Pops line.
What?
It was the New Jersey Devils in 2007. So it was Zach Parise and Travis Zajac and Jamie Langenbrunner. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it was, so the two kids had Z names, and then the old guy on the line, they called Pops. So it was the ZZ Pops line.
I love it. Yeah. I do kind of wish that we had, you know, that the Oilers had a named line, but they still get shaken around enough that that's, that that's not a thing that's going to happen. Although sometimes I amuse myself by coming up with names for lines. Like for a while, Benoit Pouliot and Jesse Puljujärvi and Ryan Nugent Hopkins were all in the same line. So like two pools, you know, Puljujärvi and Pouliot. So and Ryan Nugent Hopkins. So I called it the Hoppin' Pool Party. So, you know,
that's
like
cute.
The rest of their names really, like, on the team don't lend themselves to cute things that way. So
see, I would have called it the Pool Boy Party.
Ooh. Well, you have to say Hoppin' because you gotta get Nugent there.
Well, he can be the boy.
Well, he does look like he's about 14. I'm only saying 14 because he's got the little soul patch now. I would have said 12 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, playoff beards. Yeah. Too funny. All right. So I think that's it for today. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, if your team's still in it, good luck. And if they're not, just go watch some hockey because it's a lot of fun. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Because every time you do, a hockey player gets a goal. And that is a true fact. And you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. And remember, hockey is for everyone, especially for you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at Beginner's Puck, email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com, or leave a comment at theincomparable.com/puck.